Welcome to NPR's Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the new drunk tank. I mean, think tank.
The drunk tank.
Set, well, multi-purpose, you know, facility. But the new think tank we've set up here at Car Talk Plaza.
There are lots of strategic issues in the world which must be, if not decided, at least thought about in a calm atmosphere.
Right. So they have these think tanks in Washington. So, you know, people sit around and try to figure out the important questions that must be answered.
That's right.
Or thought about. You don't have to answer.
So here in the back of the garage, we put one together ourselves.
Yeah, we're going to try to answer questions once and for all, like, who really does have the right-of-way in a rotary? And who cares?
Yeah.
And where is the elusive Isuzu Trooper 1?
Yeah.
Where is that?
But we've been working on that for a long time.
We haven't been thinking about it. We've been
working on it, but now we're
going to get tanked up and think about it. Is that what that's all
about? Pray tell, what is the name of this think tank?
The Bushings Institute.
Am I a good straight man or what?
Can we take a call?
Yeah, hello. You're on Car Talk.
Hello. My name is Stacy, and I'm calling from Mesa, Arizona.
Stacy, what's up?
Stacy from Macy's. Mesa.
And I have, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
A 72 Chevy Chevelle.
Yeah.
Yeah?
And for some reason, it leaks. Right, well, I know, obviously.
It leaks where? Into the passenger compartment or underneath the car?
Underneath the car. And it only leaks at night. It won't leak during the day. And at first I thought, you know...
Bladder problem.
At first I thought that maybe it was just because it was colder at night. But this happened, like, even when the temperature has been constant.
What, you mean if... Well, if you park this car all day long in the daylight...
Yep.
It will not leak.
It won't leak anything.
But if you park it all night long, it will?
Yes.
Stacy, come on.
Wait a minute now.
I swear. At first I thought it was just... But then I would actually look to see if the car had been leaking during the day. It would sit there for 8 hours during the day.
But you know the difference. You park it there all day, but you haven't driven it all night. Right? When you park it all night, you've driven it all day. When you park it all day, you haven't driven it all night.
No.
If you park it all night and drive it all day, then all night it'll leak, and it all day and then
Stacy,
drive it all day.
Stacy, he's close to the right answer. Only in that he's sitting next to me. So, first of all, let's find out what it's leaking.
What does it matter?
It matters tremendously, as you will see.
And you know what it's going to be leaking?
What?
Water.
It's leaking oil.
It's leaking oil, huh?
How can two guys be so unlucky? At least if one of us had said water and one of us had said oil, one of us would be right and she wouldn't know who it was. But we both said water. We're both stupid. We're not even smart enough to fake it.
Motor oil.
And I've taken it to different garages, and they've even like shot dye through it and done the ultraviolet thing, and they can't find a leak anywhere.
Every morning you get up and you find a little bit of oil.
They're in different spots, all underneath the front of the car.
Yeah.
I can't even park it in the driveway now.
Yeah, that's bad. I mean, there are classic ways to solve this problem. The classic technique is to first steam clean the engine.
I had that done.
You did. But you've got to do it. Everything's got to be done in sequence here. You've got to steam clean the engine. And then while the engine is completely clean, that's when someone has to crawl underneath and find the leak. Because things always, when they leak, they always fall which way? Down, right? And as you drive forward, the leak gets pushed which way? Backward.
Well, why doesn't that happen when she drives to work? Is there any difference in the way your car is oriented, i.e.
is it hill-wise?
Pointing up a hill, down a hill, leaning to the side?
No, it's on level ground.
Of course, everything. Mesa, Arizona. What else would there be in Mesa, Arizona?
There are no hills. Yeah.
Is the way that you drive to work any different from the way you drive home?
No.
Good question.
I drive to work and I drive back in the same manner.
Sounds rather dull and
both
boring.
Ways.
So that's what you drive to work, and of course it's in the morning, early morning?
About 8 o'clock, 7, 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. It's cooler.
Yeah, big deal.
Well, I'm just grasping for straws.
You're not grasping, you're groping.
Groping.
Yeah, I would say, I think you hit right on it.
But here's what you do.
She shouldn't be going straight home
at night. If it leaks at night, why don't you leave it with your mechanic overnight?
let it leak in his garage.
Okay.
Yeah. There are only a finite number of places from which an engine can leak. And they haven't, I trust they haven't done enough detective work to figure it out. It can leak from the oil pan, the front seal, the rear seal. If it's a six-cylinder, it can leak from the side covers or the valve cover. And that's really about it.
Yeah, I mean, it, can, it doesn't leak through the...
Chevelles have a habit of doing this?
Pardon?
Do Chevelles have a habit of doing
this? Oh, all cars have a habit of doing this unless they're made in Japan.
But Chevelles have a tendency, especially if it's a six-cylinder, have a tendency to leak from any or all of those places I mentioned.
Right.
So, you know, they should be certainly able to find it out by looking at it closely.
Right. I mean, the only thing preventing them, we'll go back to the beginning, the only thing really preventing them from finding it is the engine has not been steam cleaned in a systematic way.
The original time that I had it taken in,
yeah.
I had it steam cleaned right before I had them take a look at it.
Well, then they're meatballs for not finding it.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't say that necessarily. You haven't demonstrated to them a willingness to spend a lot of money. Next time you go to them, open your pocketbook and have a few $100 bills just kind of fall out on the floor. But don't pick them up. They are those only hundreds. Forget it.
They get in there. Right.
And I think they'll be encouraged then to fix it.
And they'll have it done in 20 minutes.
That would be so great.
Cover your driveway with kitty litter so that it'll absorb all this oil.
Really?
But they'll fix it. Yeah, kitty litter is great. Put a cookie sheet of kitty litter under your engine.
Yeah.
At least you won't make a mess of your driveway. Of course, when it rains, never mind. The cats will like it too, right?
Right. Attract every cat.
Good luck, Stacy.
Thanks a lot.
They'll
guys.
Find it. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
All right. 1-800-332-9287 or 617-353-6350.
Hello.
Yes, my name's Tom Rhyme. I'm calling from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
How you doing, Tom?
How are you?
Good.
Oh, great.
Nice to hear your show.
Thanks. What's up?
I have a 89 Taurus station wagon, and when I turn the steering wheel, it sounds like I'm dragging an anchor chain.
I'm gonna make the noise for you.
Yeah, this is a classic. Only Ford can do this.
You ready for the noise?
Yeah.
What is that?
That's a cow under the hood. A very sick cow. That's the bovine power steering pump that Ford...
This is the bovine division.
Bovine division. Ford specializes in these.
Well, maybe you have a power steering leak, and maybe you don't. If you have a power steering leak and the pump is low on fluid, you will hear a pump whose fluid has become aerated for lack of fluid make that noise,
mm-hmm.
unless it's a Ford. In which case...
I checked the power steering.
Right, I was going to say, if you check the fluid, you'll see that it's probably right up there, and it is, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, which means you need a new pump.
Oh, okay.
But if you have the extended warranty...
I do.
Then you
then
go
you're
in
all
and...
all set, man.
And,
is that covered? I didn't want to go into the dealer until I had an idea of what it was, because you know what they do to you.
What?
What do they do?
What do they do to you?
Well, if you don't know anything about an automobile, they destroy you.
So you thought they might say to you, it's the Flugel valve, and that's not covered by the warranty,
right.
And then they'll put in a new power steering pump, they'll collect on it from Ford, and they'll collect from you for the Flugel valve. Are you suggesting that there is some sleaziness involved in the automotive industry?
Absolutely none at all.
I didn't think so. Bite thy tongue.
They're all the most honest individuals you'll ever want to meet.
It is the truth, isn't it?
Well,
it probably is the power steering pump. It sounds exactly like it.
Okay.
And tell them you know that these always go. And
tell them you know it's a classic problem. You will not pay for it under any circumstances, and you want it fixed yesterday.
All right.
All right.
But be nice.
That's fantastic.
See you later.
Good luck, Thomas.
Bye-bye.
Hey, we'll be right back with more calls and the puzzler answer right after this.
Well, hey, look, remember the last puzzle we had? You all right? You want an antacid or something? Remember this when my neighbor Frank was walking his dog?
Frank was walking his dog. He stopped at your car so his dog could do what he had to do.
Well, my azaleas, actually. The dog seems to like my azaleas.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I think Frank likes my azaleas, too, as a matter of fact. Anyway, we were just shooting the breeze, so to speak. And
like shooting skeets?
And he asked me...
Hey, the breeze, we could start another institute. We found a lot of people are shooting the breeze. We can save the breeze.
Cause.
Another cause. I was thinking of another sleazy way to make a buck.
Send a buck
to save the breeze, care of this station.
He wants to know, why is it that you don't see so many cars that won't start in the morning anymore? I mean, the vast majority of cars now, with almost no exceptions, you get in them, you turn the key.
And they start.
And the thing starts up. And he wanted to know... What is it about modern cars? What is it about bat? What have they done? What technology has befallen us?
Yeah, what about the good old days when you could, you know, actually...
The good days you could call into work and say, my car won't start. Waiting for the tow truck.
Yeah, now they know that that's... Not only that, not only have you no longer got an excuse for not showing up at work, but there is no opportunity to meet your neighbors. I mean, in the old days, at least when the car didn't start, you'd be out there, and a couple of people, at least one, would come over and say, yeah, what's the problem? And you'd say, car won't start. And they said, gee, I think my neighbor here has got jumper cables. And
right, pretty soon... It was a great socializing experience.
Three previous strangers have become soulmates. Yeah, it happened to me last week, too. And they start to discuss the world, life, and that's what causes friendship. That's the beginning.
What great technology has taken place? None.
None. Was this the puzzler?
I don't remember, but it is now. The great technology that has occurred
is that
batteries really haven't improved significantly. Starter motors haven't improved significantly.
They've all improved somewhat, but not in such a way that it would revolutionize what's going on. There have been the gradual evolutionary changes in starter motors and in batteries, neither of which is sufficient to cause this great social phenomenon.
But what has happened, that while batteries have remained about the same size and energy, engines have gotten smaller.
Mm.
By as much as 50 or 60% smaller.
50?
60. And because engines are smaller, you don't have the failure rate that you had because it's easier to start up a small engine with a battery that's almost dead.
Yeah.
So batteries last longer. Even the batteries that are marginal tend to start the engines because it doesn't take much to start engines. When you had a 5 million cubic inch motor underneath the hood and you turned the key on a cold winter morning and it went rrr, rrr, that same battery would start 4 Toyotas.
Exactly right.
Do we have a winner this week? I know you want to read something. I can see it.
No, I just like to catch up on my reading while you blab away.
What?
Yeah, the winner is Bing Crosby? Oh, no. The winner is John Cosby of Frankfort, Kentucky, the capital of Kentucky.
Indeed.
And for wasting a 25-cent stamp on us, he's going to get either a Car Talk t-shirt. No, what? Don't. It's not a Car Talk t-shirt. He will get the Car Talk t-shirt and a Save the Skeets bumper sticker or a defroster kit for the rear window of his Yugo.
Well, we'll have a new puzzle later on, so don't do it.
No, I think if you got a dirty t-shirt, you ought to also get the Save the Skeets bumper sticker thrown in. That's my feeling on it. I mean, you do whatever you like. That's how I think about it.
Can we
take
a call? 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Debbie. I'm calling from Sorrento, Maine.
Debbie, Sorrento.
Yes.
Come on, there isn't really a Sorrento, Maine.
There is.
Is it Sorrento or Sorrento?
S-O-R-R-E-N-T-O.
Well, that's not. That's a
no
fake.
No kidding.
Yeah.
The real town is Sorrento in Italy.
Speed il mare quando è bello.
Oh, give him an antacid.
Spiritando sentimente. Is that it? Is that the song?
Domenico Modugno, eat your heart out.
No habla inglés.
No, that's Julio Iglesias.
Julio no habla inglés.
What can we do for you, Debbie?
Okay, this is one of those to sell or not to sell questions.
Tercel? That's a Toyota Tercel?
Yes.
No, to sell.
Oh, to sell.
That's confusing me. Okay, we have a 1984 Saab, all right?
Yeah.
It's got 157,000 miles on it.
Really?
You know, we get more calls from people from Maine that have
Saabs
with a million miles on them. And I will tell you why.
I have a theory. You have a theory.
But Debbie, let me not interrupt you any more than I already have.
No,
continue.
We've had it for a year and a half, all right?
Did you buy it with 150,000 miles on it?
No, they bought it new. Time goes by fast in Maine.
In Maine, you drive everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, it's been pretty good to us, okay, for the most part, but we've probably put about, 1,600 or 1,700 into it. All right. We just put 4 new tires on it, and then last week it had a problem starting, and it just got to the point where it wouldn't do anything.
Can I just get this straight now, Debbie? You a year and a half ago bought a car
with 105,000 miles on it.
With how many miles on it?
Oh, I don't know. It had about 130 then, maybe.
It had 130,000 miles on it.
And if it's not too much, if it's not a personal question, how much did you pay for this car? I'm just curious.
Well, I don't know.
You can tell us. We won't tell the IRS.
Okay, about $4,000, okay?
You paid $4,000 for a 5 or 6 year old car with 130,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
Just let her finish her story.
No, I just want to get the picture straight.
But you have that you have that tone of incredulity.
Well, she's nuts.
Well, go ahead, Debbie.
She's nuts. Okay, go ahead.
Well, listen. All right, well, that's history.
That's right. But I don't want to hold it against you,
Debbie. Okay. But it's in beautiful shape. I mean, there's no rust on this car. And you would not know.
Yeah, okay.
You would not know.
Well, with 157,000, I'm sure there's no rust. The car can't sit still long enough to get rusted. Rusting only happens when the car is parked.
Okay.
Anyway, the question is this. Right now, it's running really, really well. Okay? Really well. Would it be a good time to take it and trade it or sell it and get rid of it? Or, I mean, you guys are always saying, running into the, you know, telling people to run them into the ground.
Shouldn't doing that.
You know, is 160,000 into the ground far enough for you, or should
That's
we?
Pretty deep. I mean, that is pretty deep. The fact that you have recently had starting troubles would only make me suspect that it might be getting ready to need a valve job.
Ah.
Has the wreath popped up on the hood? The funeral wreath?
That happens at 160. It happens automatically at 160.
I mean,
like
these
the little
cars
ozone light.
I mean, they're so well engineered and so well. I wouldn't say they're well engineered. I'll take that back. They're reasonably well engineered, but they are extremely well built.
Right.
And this car could run for 257,000 miles.
Okay.
But the larger question is, why do people in Maine drive so much? You know what it says on the bottom of your license plate in Maine? What does it say on Maine? Maine what? Maine is what?
Vacation land.
Right. Now, if it's such a great vacation land, why is everyone that lives in Maine trying to get the hell out of and vacation someplace else? If it's that perfect, you should stay there.
Well, maybe they are. Maybe they're vacationing within Maine, which is, as you know, is a huge, huge state.
Yeah, well,
so she may be driving, like, from Sorrento to, like, Naples.
Right.
Well, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
The car's paid for.
The cash, of course.
You don't have a problem putting $100 in here, $100 in there, but if something major happens, like, you know, and it's going to need a $1,200.
Well, it may. I mean, for example, the car is at the age where it may need something like a fuel distributor or it may need new injectors. Those things don't last forever. They, in fact, wear out.
Right.
And they're subject to the wear and tear imposed by having contamination in the fuel system, like water and dirt, and there's nothing you can do about that. Especially after 157,000 miles.
The net result of all this is if you like this car...
We do.
It doesn't matter how many miles it has on it. Who cares?
Yeah.
Because the fact of the matter is that if you like it and it keeps running, well, then why should you do anything else?
But now listen, I guess the question is, you know, right now it's in good shape. So we could probably get something for it.
No, you couldn't.
No,
don't delude.
No,
don't delude
you think
yourself.
Because you were sucker enough to pay $4,000 for a car with 140,000 miles on it, that you're going to find another one up there? No.
So I might as well just, I mean, it could go another 50,000, right?
Sure, it could.
It could.
Keep driving it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why not?
Call us back next year.
Okay.
It'll have 220 on it, and it'll still be going.
Okay.
See you later, Debbie.
Good luck, Debbie.
Bye-bye. 1-800-332-9287. There is no limit to human endurance. It really is a lawyer on Car Talk.
All you have to do is look in my driveway to know that.
Or your wife. Hello.
Hi, this is Sarah from Oakland.
Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Sarah.
What's
I'd
up?
I'd like to just say that in these troubling times, it's strangely comforting to speak with you. It's like escape to the planet of the good-natured guys.
It is strange to speak to us, isn't it?
Yeah.
Comforting. Here's why I called. Last week, I was a passenger in a friend's car. As we sat for 3 or 4 minutes while she warmed it up, I very innocently said, you know, Click and Clack say you don't have to do this.
She said, the hell with them. Who cares?
She said, exactly. This normally sweet person started to get quite bristly.
She started ranting and raving.
They couldn't have said it. What's more, they couldn't have said it about a Honda Civic. So as it got heated, in a moment of passion, I said, I bet you $100 you're wrong.
Ooh!
Now, guys, do the right thing.
Well
are you willing
to
share this $100 with the Save the Skeets Foundation or what?
I'll do whatever you say.
What station do you listen to in Oakland?
KQED. Center.
All right, here's the deal. We'll give you the answer you want. You send half the $50 to KQED.
You got it.
You got it? What answer do you want?
What right answer do you want?
What side were you on?
No, you were on the non-warming up side.
Sure.
Well, I thought, I don't know the viscosity RPM stuff, but what I said to her was, if you drive it gently, you know, you just keep it really slow. You know, it's an internal combustion machine. It's idling is, you know, doing something. And if you drive it slow, it's doing something. And you save gas, just go slow and you can warm it up.
God, Sarah, have you got it or what?
That's exactly it.
You are absolutely 1,500% right.
Oh, God bless you. Now, what about the Honda Civic Clause?
Honda Civic Clause is balderdash. Of course, it applies to every vehicle on the face of the earth, including my 1963 Dodge Dartra.
Well, there are exceptions.
If it will go, you go. That's the answer.
Well, there's the issue. Her Civic evidently won't go unless she warms it up because there's something wrong with it.
Right. If it won't go, then there's something else wrong with it, but warming up is not fixing it.
How old is your Civic?
I don't know. It's probably at 5 years old.
Oh, then there's something wrong. I mean, that car should start up and be willing to drive away.
30 seconds.
Within 5 seconds, you should be able to drive it away. But certainly a warmer period of in the extreme cold weather, which you get a lot of, I'm sure, in Oakland.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, in, I have a cold spell, you know.
Yeah, it's down to 48. So anyway, you should tell her to just start it up and drive away. You win. Is there any exception?
I can't think of any exception. The truth is, if the car will go, I can't think of any exception, any circumstance under which you wouldn't want to just go.
And if the car won't go, it means there's something wrong with it. If the weather is moderate, there's no car that's produced today or has been produced in the last 15 years that you can't get into, start up and drive away.
You guys are great.
And that is the best thing to do, both for the engine, for the environment, and for you.
I'm so glad I gave us all an opportunity to know this.
I'm glad you did.
And for KQED, too.
I will.
See you, Sarah.
Hey, if they don't get that check, Sarah.
I promise.
This answer is completely retractable.
No, I'm good for it.
All right.
No, she's good for it. She's got to come.
She's got to come across.
That's right.
That's right.
See you later.
Bye.
Okay,
thanks. Bye-bye.
Hey, you're listening to Car Talk. We'll be right back with more calls and a new puzzler.
We're back. This is Car Talk with Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to try to answer your questions.
Now, just a moment ago, we have the call about warming up, and I just got a letter from Louise Meyer, who says, I'd like to ask you about the effects of the traditional American 10-minute morning car warm-up ritual.
Yes.
People evidently still are confused by this. What did you want to talk about?
I don't remember.
Okay.
But we will do our utmost to unobfuscate.
No. Fuscate. Obfuscate must be bad, so fuscate must be okay.
I beg your pardon. But we'll do whatever we can to clear up this controversy. But in the meantime, I know you're dying to read a letter.
No, I'm not. I don't care.
I can see you chomping at the paper now.
I don't care.
It's time for us to go to a new puzzler.
You have one?
Yeah, I have one. This is kind of an interesting puzzler, and I'm sure... there are some people that will get it immediately, and there are others that won't, as is often the case.
Mm-hmm.
I tried this on my brother, and he scratched his head for 20 minutes. There's a big hole right there. I remember years ago, I can't tell you how many years ago because I don't remember, but it was more than a year ago, I got a call from an anxious do-it-yourselfer who was doing a clutch on his Honda.
Yeah. You
know, he had a Honda Accord. I think it was like a 1981 Honda Accord.
Yeah.
Or an 82. Or maybe even an 83. Now, it couldn't have been more than 10 years ago. No. Anyway, he and his mother-in-law were out in the driveway, and they had the thing jacked up.
Right.
And they were attempting to remove the transaxle, which is what front-wheel drive cars have. They have the transmission and the axle assembly, or the final drive assembly, in one whole
one
housing.
One big box.
Okay? Called the transaxle. And that's what you do in order to replace the clutch. You take that whole thing out. And then you put your new clutch in, you put that old thing back in, you shove the axles back in, you put the tires back on, and a month and a half later, you drive away. And he called me up, and he said, I got a problem. He said, I'm attempting to take off the transaxle, and I've got power steering fluid coming out of the transmission.
Ooh.
He said, what is power steering fluid? He said, is that the lubricant that's in the transmission?
And you said...
I said, no.
Au contraire.
I said, what's in the transmission is 10W-40 motor oil. That's what the lubricant is for the gears in the transmission. He said, well, why is there power steering fluid going into the transmission? I pull off these hoses, and power steering fluid comes out of them.
Hmm.
I said, in rhyme.
Fill in the blanks, and you'll have the answer.
What did I say to this anxious do-it-yourself? If you think you know the answer, you can send it to us at Puzzler Tower.
Yes.
Think Tank. Car Talk Plaza.
Bushings Institute.
WBUR, 630 Commonwealth Ave, Boston.
Our fair city.
Very well done. Massachusetts, 022215.
You know, I just, we were discussing just the other day, you said Massachusetts, and you said M-A period. And I said, uh-uh, there's no period after M-A. And our good buddy, Bill Sapphire, addressed the very issue in a recent on-language column of the New York Times, the very issue of the proper way to address a letter. And he pointed out that not only do you not put a period after the abbreviation for the state, but you do not put a comma
between the city and the state.
Between the city and the state.
Well, we don't. We have Our Fair City written
Our
in there.
Our Fair City in parentheses. Right. That's okay.
That's okay.
He didn't discuss that aspect of it.
Well, we'll be sure to write to him. 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
I'm calling from Nashville, Tennessee.
Hello, who's this?
Julian Fautre.
Hi, Julian.
What's up?
Well, I have a Toyota truck, a great vehicle. It's got about 97,000 miles on it, 1986. With a 22R engine in it.
Yes.
And I'm having some strange starting problem. A few weeks ago, I noticed, although I didn't think much of it, I should have, that once in a while when I went to turn on the engine, turn the key,
click,
started, nothing happened. But
yeah,
I'd turn it off and turn it on, and it would work perfectly.
Well, it wasn't exactly true that nothing happened.
You're
probably
right.
Heard a little click.
I don't think so. But let me continue. Then we had a cold streak. Well, cold for Nashville. It was down in the teens.
That's cold for anywhere.
Every morning for this cold streak.
Started right up.
I'd go out and nothing would happen at all.
Okay.
So luckily I live on a little hill. I'd roll it down the hill. It'd start the rest of the day. Everything would be perfect. Then the next morning, exactly the same. On the fourth morning when it was above freezing all night, it started perfectly in the morning, and it has since started perfectly every time except one other morning when it was well
now that the cold snap is over.
Yeah.
Methinks you need a starter motor.
Yeah, methinks so too.
Well, why would it just do it like that?
Well, things shrink when they get cold. it's very likely that the brushes and the commutator and all that have shrunk enough on a cold morning so that when you turn the key, you're not getting electrical contact, and the motor won't turn. And then once you run the thing and you get it warmed up, of course, if you shut it off, it'll start then.
Yeah.
And then, of course, during the daytime, when the temperature has gone up, it will start. But you leave it overnight, it cools off. And, of course, now that the weather is moderated a bit, it's going to start for you. Except that the next spell of cold weather is going to mean it doesn't start again.
But if you gave it a good whack on that cold day while you had it in the crank position, you might get that starter to turn over.
Right, you can see the starter. It's sticking out right there. If you follow the positive battery cable,
sure.
It'll go right to the starter motor.
Sure, he knows right where it is. He's looked at it many times.
You know, contemplated it.
While scratching my head, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Here's what you do. Have an assistant, when it won't start, turn the key and hold it all the way over to the crank position.
Yeah.
Stand to one side in the event that the vehicle is in first and not in neutral.
Yeah.
And whack that thing with a broom handle while they're holding
it. How about a baseball
while
bat?
While that person is holding
it. Don't forget, this guy lives in Nashville.
I have one in my truck, yeah.
So he could use a Nashville slugger.
Right. So that's what you do. Hit it with something stout.
Well, like, good. If I'm not on a hill, I could resort to that.
You could resort to that.
Well,
and if it doesn't start, keep hitting it and hitting it.
Until it breaks. Then you'll need a starter for sure.
If I knock it off, then I need one for sure.
No, I mean, you really want to do this not so much to start it, but to convince yourself that it really is the starter.
Right, because what you'll do is you'll jar loose the brushes for a second, and you'll make contact. And once they make contact, the starter will begin to spin.
Let me ask you this. Will this problem eventually spread into warm weather?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it will. Yes.
This problem will eventually be right. That the car will never start.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
that's what it is.
Terrific.
So after 97K, it's likely you need a new starter, and buy a good one. Buy one right from Toyota.
Right. Yes. If someone tries to sell you a starter for $75, don't do it.
How much is a starter?
Oh, I don't know, but it's
$750.
Well, thank you.
Thanks
good luck,
a lot,
Julian.
For calling.
Thanks for the call.
See you guys.
Bye bye. Well, another hour of NPR's Car Talk has come to an end.
Mercifully. gentlemen.
The show is produced by Doug Berman. Our assistant producer is Donald Jennings. Ken Rogers is our engineer and the dean of the Department of Auto Musicology. He needs submissions, by the way, so anyone that wants to be a subject of Ken is only willing to... Oh, no, those music submissions. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Any ideas for car-type songs?
Right, and you can send them to the Department of Auto Musicology, Car Talk Plaza, 630 Commonwealth Ave, Boston.
Our fair city.
Massachusetts, 02215. Attention, Ken Rogers. Our technical advisor is John S. Bugsy Lawler.
What does the S stand for?
I don't remember. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky.
Upholsterer.
I keep
stumbling.
Will
you get it right? Public opinion seat cover upholsterer.
It's Paul Murky of Murky Research. Our automotive medical researcher is Dr. Denton Fender. We haven't heard from the old doc in a while.
And someone just wrote to us asking, why have we fired our estimable Rabbi Emmanuel Transmission?
Well, we haven't fired him. He's on assignment.
He's on manager sabbatical.
Of the Tappet Brothers Capital Depreciation Fund is Les Ismore. Our staff grammarian is I am Shirley Wright. We keep her busy, of course. Our staff composer is, of course, Bela Kartok. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. This is NPR, National Public Radio.